Everybody enjoy the psalm thing last week. And Ben Prather, I don't know if how many people here are on Facebook? I mean, use a Facebook account. Are you guys, everybody that uses a Facebook account, are you on the Eastgate page and stuff too? If you're not, you know, you can join the Eastgate group. And then Ben started a thread there on that, posting the psalms and stuff. Missy, you put yours there, and Ben put his there. But if you want to share your psalm, that's a great place to go to do that, and you can look at those. Well, we're going to move along in our Bible studies. It seems kind of strange. You guys remember, right, that the next 2 weeks we're not going to be meeting here on Wednesdays because this place is going to be under construction at that time. So it seems kind of strange. I sat for a long time trying to decide whether we should start something or not, but I think we are. We're going to go ahead and start a new book tonight, and what we're going to be dealing with is just the introduction to it. So I won't even really be keeping you here that long tonight, but we're going to start a study in the book of Proverbs. Now, Proverbs is a tough book to do. You know, honestly, you're going to find that if you do any kind of independent research, you're going to find that very few teachers actually tackle the book of Proverbs. I mean, it's a rarity to find any expository teacher dealing with Proverbs. Even my hero, David Guzik, who I rely on his commentaries a lot, he didn't even touch Proverbs. So, you know, it's a tough book. And I don't know. It seems like there's two books that usually get avoided when it comes to expository teaching, and that's Leviticus and Proverbs. And we did Leviticus, so I mean, why not do Proverbs? I don't know. I mean, it only makes sense. It only makes sense that I feel kind of led to go into that when it's that difficult to preach. So we'll see. We'll see how it works out. If it ends up being really dumb, then maybe I'll concede and say I can't do this. But I don't know. I'm hoping we can. The main obstacle to why people don't seem to want to teach out of Proverbs is, for the obvious reason, it's so difficult to outline. When you think of the you know, the basic content of the book of Proverbs, we're usually thinking of a lot of disconnected sayings that are dealing with life. And so it's, you know, it doesn't have any kind of real contextual connection between the statements. You've got, you know, verses that seem to be isolated. So, you know, and that's actually true, but it's only true for a portion of the book. It's not true of the whole thing. Actually, the very first part of it, the first nine chapters, follow a very logical pattern that have a real organization to them. So we'll be able to, at least for the first nine chapters, be able to feel like we're on solid ground. And then we'll, you know, move on and see how we approach it after that. The other obstacle that writers have pointed out, that preachers at least have pointed out as being a reason why they don't want to deal with Proverbs, and this one actually surprised me, is one writer called it the crisis of irrelevance, where he saw a huge disconnection between these ancient sayings and our modern society or the modern culture that we're in. And the quote from him is that, how does one teach Proverbs 23:13, which says, don't withhold correction from a child, for you, if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. How does one teach that in a world where child abuse is prevalent? And I admit that is actually a challenging concept. You know, we are going to have to realize that we're dealing with an ancient culture, an ancient perspective, but I don't believe that that's any more of an obstacle than other times that we've come across an ancient perspective and trying to contextualize it for our own use or application. So to me, that doesn't seem that big of an impediment. Obviously, we're going to have to read it from the lens of its historic context, but I believe the principles that are here in the book of Proverbs are universal. I believe they can be applicable in any generation, in any time. I mean, how would I deal with that passage? You just have to find out when we get there. The other thing that people avoid Proverbs on a regular basis is because it seems to a lot of people to be more to have its general content more along the lines of you know, observations, just life observations without any real theological sort of content. But I suppose that kind of stems from, you know, kind of a narrow view of what comprises theology. I think that to me, when I look at the Proverbs, I believe that it's taken for granted. The theology is taken for granted. Is, you know, it's firmly set in the covenant between Israel and God, and His grace is the background on which all of these truths are being presented. So, to me, I think that's kind of a silly kind of a concept. You know, some guys come across fairly piously, like they're not going to deal with that because of that. So, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is the direction that we're heading out. We're going to get on what Professor Thomas Long called the deserted stretch of highway between Psalms and Ecclesiastes, called the Proverbs. Did you have any idea that people were that down on Proverbs? I didn't either. But it seems to be the attitude of some people, not of everybody, obviously. But we're gonna go through this, and I think we're gonna find it a lot more alive than some people have seen. And again, I don't know exactly the structure of how we're gonna go about this. I know that one of the challenges that we faced when we were going through Psalms was that there was a certain bit of repetition to the whole thing. We got, you know, we were kind of going through the same patterns on a regular basis, but at the same time, I felt like they were unique enough in each of the Psalms as they were presented that it was insightful and helpful. So I'm hoping that it's going to be that the same way with this. I know that it seems kind of odd to begin a series when we're going to take a two-week break from all of this. But, you know, I think that this will at least pique our interest. I'm hoping that maybe, you know, we'll begin to read Proverbs on our own before we actually get back in here together and explore this. It'd be a good challenge. You know, there's 31 Proverbs, you know, 31 chapters of Proverbs. It's not a bad idea to set up a month. I know several people who use that as a monthly exercise. They'll go through and read a chapter of the Proverbs each day of the month. And so anyway, I'm hoping that you know, it's something that inspires us to get into that, to look at the Proverbs, to consider how they can be applied to our own lives. The book of Proverbs is one of the wisdom books of the Bible. And remember, that's also inclusive of the Psalms. Job is in that as well. Ecclesiastes, the Song of Solomon. Those are the way that the ancient Hebrew rabbis divided up the canonized Old Testament, and they grouped them into different patterns. You had the books of the law, which were the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. You also had the prophets, and you had the wisdom books, and you had the other ones. I forget what they are now. Anyway, as we're looking at this, if you've opened up to Proverbs, the very first verse begins, it says, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. So verse 1 actually gives us the title, and that more than likely was intended to be the title of this book. The rabbis of Israel always referred to this as the Proverbs of Solomon. It wasn't until after this was translated into Greek that they dropped Solomon off of that and just shortened it to Proverbs like that. The word is mashal, and it literally means a comparison. So a proverb in its literal sense was the idea of holding something up into the light for comparison, for examination. It's taken to mean a wise, insightful pronouncement. It was Proverbs, writing down proverbs and proverbial sayings was a very common form of literature in the ancient Near East. I mean, as a matter of fact, there's a lot of archaeological remnants of proverbs written by, you know, the pagan kings from the Sumerian region and from Egypt. There's a lot of proverbs, and they follow suit with the kinds of proverbs that we actually find in here. Someone described a proverb as a short sentence based on a long experience. And so the idea behind a proverb is that it's something that's intended to be a guide for life, something to try to help and illuminate for the inexperienced some of the experiences that life has revealed. It's intended to provide guidance. In the ancient world, there was a greater realization than there is in our world today, a greater realization that the older generation has experienced more and has gained more wisdom, at least practical experience, taught wisdom that they pass on to the younger generation. And so there was a, you know, in the ancient world, there was a prioritization of that sort of thing. You know, the adage, you've heard that adage before, the youth is wasted. Is that how the youth is wasted on the young? You know, the idea that, you know, when we're young and we've got all this energy and strength and virility and we're able to, you know, it seems like we're able to do so much, and yet we don't have the wisdom to know how to exercise that power or that strength. And it's not until we've lived for a while and we've experienced things and we're too old to have that kind of energy that we finally put it all together. And, you know, it's kind of the way it's been since the fall. There's this cycle where we, you know, it's kind of like, aha, and then we keel over. So that's the concept that in ancient cultures, and really even probably in our culture up until maybe post-World War II, we venerated the older generation. We recognized that there was wisdom there that we needed, you know, so that we could properly use our strength. The proverbial device is meant to impart the wisdom that was gained by experience to those who have not yet experienced these things in life. It's a means of trying to impart that kind of wisdom. Now, in a youth-oriented culture like ours, that's part of the reason why Proverbs maybe comes off as irrelevant or unimportant. We prioritize the adolescent mindset. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you noticed that, but all the heroes, everything that we have represented in popular media is always from an adolescent perspective. It's always the slacker who's the hero. It's always the one who's going against the systems or working in opposition to the generation that's come before him. And of course, you know, obviously there's a lot of fun irreverence involved in that, and it just seems kind of, you know, cool or whatever. But that may have something to do, as we look at our culture and our society, that kind of mentality, that kind of attitude that we've developed, that prioritization of the perpetual adolescent, may have something to do with why recently the U.S. ranked number 18 in education among the 36 industrial nations that were looked at. I mean, we've dropped quite a bit. There was a time when we led the way there. Now we've dropped to the 18th. South Korea leads the way in that realm now. And yet, we rank number one when it comes to national confidence. Our education is low. Our confidence is really high, which is almost a little scary to be a nation of overly confident, stupid people. But I don't think we have to worry about it yet. I think we have to worry if our national motto suddenly changes to, hey, y'all watch this, or something like that. But that's off subject. Solomon is the writer that this book is attributed to. But not all the Proverbs in this book are actually written by Solomon. So a lot of people look at this as being more in an editorial sense. Solomon's name affixed to this, wisdom in the vein of Solomon, though we would assume that much of this is from Solomon. There's no reason not to think that. Back when Solomon became king, he was the son of David. When he took the throne, he became king. He asked God. God appeared to him, and he said to him, "What do you want? Whatever the desire of your heart is, whatever you want the most, I'll grant it to you on David's behalf." And he said, "The thing I want the most, the most important thing that I want, is I want to be wise. I want wisdom." And God was stoked with that. He said, "Well, since you asked for wisdom and not riches or power, I'm going to give you all three of those. You're going to have all of that." So Solomon has always been associated as the wisest king of Israel. He's 1 Kings 4:29-34 says that Solomon wrote or spoke 3,000 proverbs and 1,005 songs. But this can't be all of them in Proverbs, because there's less than 1,000 proverbs in this book. So, you know, we don't know if out of those Proverbs that First Kings mentions, how many of those are in here. This would probably be kind of more like, I guess we could kind of call it Solomon's Greatest Hits or something like that, kind of a compilation album they released in a box set or something. Some have tried to assert that Solomon had nothing to do with this book. As a matter of fact, there's a large contingencies of those who promote higher criticism of the scriptures who say that this was something that was written during the period of time right after Israel came out of exile. And part of the reasons that they cite that is by the time we get to chapter 25, Hezekiah is mentioned as being someone who copied the Psalms copied the Proverbs of Solomon and included them in this book. We know that the post-exilic priests were compiling this and putting this together, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it was written at that time or composed at that time. Now, conservative scholars largely rule that argument out on the basis of several things. Apart from what I just mentioned there, there's absolutely no evidence that this was written at a later date than the time of Solomon. There's nothing, you know, other than the fact that King Hezekiah gets mentioned later on, there's nothing else that would ever indicate that this was written at a later time. And the other thing about it, which I think is the most compelling argument, is that the writing form is more closely associated with the ancient Proverbs that I was mentioning earlier. As a matter of fact, if you compare them all, they're very similar. There's actually a great deal of similarity between the writing structure of the pagan Proverbs and this book of Proverbs as well. And the thing about it, Solomon's time was a time of peace and prosperity. He was wise. He had gained a lot of wealth. David had inherited a lot of wealth that he'd given to Solomon. All of the nations that surrounded Israel at the time were in subjection to Israel. So they had peace on every side when Solomon became king. And it's always in that kind of an environment that literature and the arts and sciences flourish. It makes much more sense to place it at an earlier date in a time when Israel had that kind of a peaceful environment than the period of time after the exile, because there was nothing but raw survival going on during those periods of times. And it's really true throughout history. If you go to ancient Roman history and you look at some of the greatest literature and plays and poetry that came out of ancient Rome, it came during the time of Augustus Caesar, the time when the Roman Empire experienced the greatest amount of peace and prosperity. So it's those kinds of things that caused that sort of thing to flourish. And so to me, there's absolutely no reason to assume a later date on this. Even if there's an editorial sense in which Solomon's name is used, it still belies an earlier writing period. Now, the key purpose of Proverbs lies in the word wisdom in verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. That's basically kind of like the overall heading that sums up what it is that's going to be happening here in this book as we're reading it. God desires for us to have wisdom. There's no premium on ignorance that he places there. And so much of the wisdom that is found in this book, contrary to opinions of some people, is universally applicable, even for us as 21st century American Christians. And some of the key themes that we're going to be looking at in the book of Proverbs are understanding a proper relationship to God and how it touches our lives in practical ways. The book of Proverbs has a lot of practical advice for us as human beings trying to live our lives in connection with God. There's a lot of very practical truth in this book. Other themes deal with what constitutes a happy life, a fulfilled or a satisfied life, or what constitutes a useful life. What makes us useful? How it is that we, as 21st century American Christians, realizing that our place and purpose is to make a difference in this world, to make a difference on behalf of the kingdom of God, well, the book of Proverbs actually reveals to us what a useful life looks like from God's perspective. Those are things that we can learn from that. And those are things that help us to to begin to piece together our own identities, why I'm here, who I am, what this is all about. Another theme will be proper priorities. Life lived according to God's purposes isn't just going to happen. I really honestly believe we had a move of the Spirit here last Sunday, and that's one of the things that we talked about at that point was, you know, the idea that there needs to be action behind these commitments that we make in our hearts. And one of the things that Proverbs reveals to us is that we're never just going to drift into the kind of life that we were meant to have. We're never just going to drift into that. It's never just going to happen someday. We're going to wake up someday and everything's finally happening the way God intended it to happen. No, it requires on our part a determination to set out on this course, a determination to take up a different kind of life. There's a discipline involved in that, a discipline in pursuing and seeking after God's will and His values and His ways, adopting those values and making the hard choices that come along with that. That's all part of it. That's part of what the Christian life is all about. It was never meant to be something that we just lay around with this grace that God gives us and wait for heaven to show up. That was never His intention in that. And of course, you know, I'm hoping I don't have to qualify every time. That doesn't mean that we have to work our way into salvation. We're not saying that we do works to be saved. We're just saying that the purpose, the reason for our salvation is something more than just laying around waiting for heaven to show up. We're here to make a difference in this world, to change this place as it's moving towards the revelation of the kingdom of heaven when it's revealed. Stuff to be a part of, the stuff that makes a difference. So there's a lot of different things that we learn in this. We realize that a life like we're describing there is available to anybody who desires to pursue it. It's not open to just a select few or those who have this hidden knowledge or something along those lines. This is open for everybody. Anyone who's willing to step out on this pathway is going to be able to experience it. We're going to learn about discipline. We're going to learn about laziness and friendship and what kind of talk can get us in trouble and what kind of talk can help encourage people. We're going to learn about marriage and we're going to learn about child rearing and domestic peace and work ethics and good manners and eternity and all kinds of cool stuff. It's all packed into Proverbs, and we can dig that stuff out and glean it. Now, in looking at the Proverbs, as we're going to go through it, there are going to be several character types or caricatures, I could say, that Proverbs employs. And if we get a grasp on these key characters at the outset here, we're going to better be able to understand what it is that's being expressed in this. There are three main characters that emerge over and over again in these writings. The first character is the wise, those who are wise. The wise are described as those who embrace God's plan, who recognize God has the plan, His way is the right way, and I'm going to follow His way and do things as He says and live life the way He describes it. Those are the wise. That's what Proverbs describes. Then you have the fools. The fools are not what we think of, not people with court jester hats on or things like that. But a fool, from the perspective of Proverbs, is one who rejects God's plan, God's path, who looks at God's way and says, no, I don't want to do that. I want to do my own thing. That's the height of folly, according to the writer, from the perspective of the Proverbs. So we've got the wise who embrace God's plan. We've got the fools who disregard God's plans and even work against God's plan. So the fools, we'll find, as this goes along, are actually synonymous with those who are evil in their intentions, those who are unredeemed, we could say, in that sense. And then there's a third category of people that will emerge, caricatures in this, and those are the simple. They're not like stupid people, or that's not what he's trying to get across in that. But the simple are those who are either uninformed or not yet committed to God's ways. They're people who are in danger of being swayed to the wrong path. And so there's always this call to the simple, to those who need this instruction, who need to learn what the right way is. So we've got the wise, we've got the fools, and then in the tension between these two, we've got the simple, who could be swayed one way or the other. So those are caricatures in there that we can take a look at. And remember, when we're saying that they're caricatures, We have to remember that, that, you know, as we look at some of these things in Proverbs, there's the vehicle of exaggeration being employed. You know, a caricature. If you're going to draw a caricature of somebody, you know, if I'm going to draw a caricature of my brother, I'm going to draw big, gigantic ears and, you know, a bald head or something like that. You know, the exaggerations of the things that are there to try to make the point. You know, some sort of huge kilt hanging off of him or something like that. But it's not really what he looks like to most people, just to me. But the idea behind that is to exaggerate. It's to exaggerate to make the point. So sometimes we're going to be seeing that kind of vernacular used in the writings here. There's exaggerations going to be made in order to make the point, in order to drive home the idea behind it. We've got to be very careful as we explore through these Proverbs. A dangerous territory that people have gotten into before is to dive into Proverbs and start turning some of these observations into promises that they expect that life is going to work out according to you know a statement that's made in Proverbs, or that it's a means of trying to define some aspect of the spiritual realm, and that gets into dicey territory, because again we're going to be using imagery just like we did in the Psalms. We're going to be using parallelisms and metaphor, and it's we've got to be careful as we go through this, that we understand that the basic intent is to provide for us what he said there, wisdom, a means of being able to understand life as we're living it, a means of being able to approach life from a proper perspective. Quick outline of this book: the first 9 chapters are basically a conversation between a father and a son, or a father speaking to his son, trying to encourage him about the paths that he should take in life. You know, and that's an important kind of reference in that, because one of the most prevalent images that we have of God is that of a father. So you can kind of almost get that sense in the background of it, even though the vehicle is a real father and a real son in this conversation. In the background of that, we still have that idea of God as our Father trying to instruct us. Here's the way. Here's the way you should go. This is the right way. And don't go the wrong way, because the wrong way leads to the kind of destruction that gets described in this. Chapter 8 of Proverbs in the early church was always identified as being a forecast of Christ. And we'll look at that when we get to chapter 8. But the personification of wisdom. In the early church, that was a very important connection that was made, not so much post that time, but in recent years, there's been a resurgence of intrigue and interest on making that connection there. Chapters 10 through 24 gets into Proverbs proper. That's where we're going to get into all the various sayings. And there are groupings together that we'll be able to look at as we go through those. Chapters 25 to 29 deal with the Proverbs that were copied by Hezekiah. Chapter 30 is the Proverbs of Agur. Chapter 31, verses 1 to 9, are the Proverbs of Lemuel, another proverb writer, King Lemuel. And then verses 10 to 31 of Proverbs 31 is by an anonymous author describing a virtuous woman. And those are the kind of there's the breakdown of the book as we go through it. Let me just read verses 2 through 6, because that's the basic introduction to this book to give us an idea of what it's going to be about. Verse 2 of Proverbs 1 says, "These are the proverbs of Solomon, son of David, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discernment to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles." Now, I want to actually read this to you out of the Message, because I just love the way Eugene Peterson paraphrases this, and this may be something we'll do on a regular basis. And I don't know if we're able to do. We're probably not able to do that back there on the computer or not. I don't know. Let me just read it to you rather than try to go through all of that. This is how he words it. These are the wise sayings of Solomon, David's son, Israel's king, written down so we'll know how to live well and right, to understand what life means and where it's going, a manual for living, for learning what's right and just and fair, to teach the inexperienced the ropes, and to give our young people a grasp on reality. There's something here also for seasoned men and women, still a thing or two for the experienced to learn, fresh wisdom to probe and penetrate the rhymes and reasons of wise men and women. So that's the basic idea of what Proverbs is going to be for us. We're going to be looking at this to try to glean the instruction that God would want us to have, to gain the wisdom that he intends for us to gain. It's going to be, its intention originally, I suppose, was for young people to be able to learn from the experience of older, but he says it's also for the old to continue on learning. So this is kind of the motto for the whole book. This is sort of the key from which we begin to understand this thing. And there's a kind of a grid that we'll use as we break these Proverbs down. You know, we'll kind of go through wondering what's the, as we look at it, what virtue is commended in a particular proverb, or section? What virtue is commended? What vice is warned about or warned against or disapproved of? And then what value is affirmed in this? So we're going to be looking at the virtues, at the vices, and the values, the virtues that God wants us to embrace, the vices that he wants us to avoid, and the values that he wants us to express in the lives that we live. So, Father, I just pray that you enable us to have your wisdom as we look at this wisdom book. I just pray that we're able to see by your Spirit, to have an insight based on your awakening, the awakening that you provide to us. Help us to read this and gain life from it. Father, I don't believe it's a deserted highway in between a couple books. I believe there's life on this road for us. And so I just pray that you awaken life in us as we read through the book of Proverbs. I ask this, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.